This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. In October 2020, India and South Africa proposed a landmark intellectual property waiver at the World Trade Organization to temporarily waive patents, to call for a temporary waiver of patents related to COVID-19 diagnostics, drugs and vaccines for as long as the pandemic rages on. Now, while the TRIPS waiver, as it's commonly referred to, has been backed by more than 100 countries, now, progress has been blocked, unsurprisingly, by a handful of wealthy countries. So now, you know, we are seeing many countries across the globe with high vaccination rates. Many are beginning to treat COVID-19 as endemic. You might ask, is such a waiver still needed? So today, I'm joined by Chi Yok Ling, the Executive Director of the Third World Network, to dive into this and to also discuss the criticisms leveled at a recently leaked draft text regarding the waiver. Thank you so much for joining me today, Yok Ling.
Hello, good to be on the program.
Now, Yok Ling, before we dive into it, right, could you briefly explain, you know, what is the TRIPS waiver and what were South Africa and India actually calling for back in October 2020?
Right. So basically, we hear the word TRIPS, and TRIPS is actually the abbreviation for a very tongue-twisting name of a World Trade Organization agreement. It's called the Trade-Related Intellectual Property Rights Agreement. That's why it's called TRIPS. So this is actually the first time in international law that a WTO member has to join this agreement, right? And this was concluded sometime in the early 90s. And for the first time, all countries which are members of the WTO have to comply with what they call minimum standards of intellectual property protection, and you've got to implement it in your national law. Now, intellectual property covers a whole range of things. Yeah, of course, patents is what we hear a lot of, because especially in the context of medicines and vaccines. But intellectual property, this agreement covers copyright, trademark, industrial design, and what we call, normally we understand it as trade secrets. Mm-hmm. And this is important because this covers a lot of technology know-how, which is a big part of what we will be discussing today about vaccines and medicines.
Hmm. So perhaps let's do a bit of a 101 on what intellectual property and patents are, right? Could you explain why are they important?
Yes.
You know, how do they work? And perhaps could you give us some examples?
Sure. Okay. Now, I think we should do that first so that we understand why there was this big push to, and why there has been so much support globally for this temporary waiver. A waiver is a temporary suspension, right? So let's go back to the basics. Yeah. As I said, there are different types of monopolies in the market. What it does is intellectual property gives a private right, whether it's a patent or a trademark or copyright, to the holder of this so-called right. And with that grant, from your intellectual property office, then you will get a monopoly in the market to manufacture, to import, to sell, to even to stock up some things, right? So you have actually total monopoly for a period of 20 years, yeah, for technologies and products. So let's just zoom in on patents, because mm-hmm. that's a big part of what we're talking about in the medical field. Mm-hmm. So to get a patent monopoly, you have to show that you have invented a product, okay, or a process of making something, mm-hmm. and your invention has to fulfill three steps. One, it has to be new. The other one, it has to involve an inventive step. So something that anybody can think of within the field of that profession. If I can think about it, you can think about it. It's nothing so inventive, right? Mm-hmm. So because remember, you are in the end granting a monopoly, and you are the only one who can produce and sell that product. So you have to show it's new, it has involved an inventive step, and it's something that is able to be used in an industrial production. So in other words, if I have a very good idea, it's inventive, but it's purely research, I cannot get a monopoly because research is something that should be open. So it has to be these three steps, right? Now, once you satisfy the three steps, then you can be granted a 20-year patent, right? Now, what is new, what will constitute and make up an inventive step depends on the law of each country. Mm-hmm. That is why sometimes you read about, wow, there are, you know, medicines which are available, made by different manufacturers, what we call generic medicines. So a generic A generic is actually the same version of the originator medicine. So you're the originator, you are the one that normally will go out there to get your patent monopoly, mm-hmm. right? So then, but if a country that has very strict rules about what is new, what is inventive, that's why you see in India, there are many, many medicines that do not have patents because their standards of what will meet the criteria are quite high. In Malaysia, by contrast, our patent guidelines and standards are pretty low. So we have a lot of patents given to medicines which you might not find, let's say, in India or in Egypt. Yeah, in which case, they have generic medicines, bring down the price, many products in the market, many manufacturers, whereas we are stuck with one supplier because we have given that monopoly through patents and other intellectual property. And this is one of the problems. Let me give you a quick example. Mm-hmm. I think many of us in this country may have read, it was a lot of publicity, when hepatitis C is an infectious disease, right? It's caused by a virus and it can be cured. So there was a medicine that was actually discovered and developed in the United States. And if you catch it and test your patient early and you find that you have hepatitis C, you treat these patients, within 12 weeks, you can cure them. Now, this product came out in the United States and it was priced at $84,000 for 12 weeks. All right, $84,000 US for 12 weeks. Now, pharmaceutical companies always launch their product first in the US because this is the most expensive country for drugs. So you start your level very, very high. So in Malaysia, it was impossible for us. And we have, the estimate in 2015 was that we may have about 400,000 people who have hepatitis C in the country, mm-hmm. right? So, but we could not afford to have that medicine here. And you needed to use it with two. It's called sofosbuvir, right? Mm-hmm. So you needed to do it in combination with another one. So if you could bring it privately in, it would cost, in a private hospital in Penang, it was something like 450,000 ringgit.
Gosh.
To treat for 12 weeks, right? So this is impossible. So the Ministry of Health, even if it wanted to give it for free because we have a public health system, couldn't do it because it was just so expensive. However, there was a company in Egypt that was making the same drugs of sofosbuvir because the Egypt patent office did not give a patent saying that this is not new or inventive. Mm. It didn't have the novelty test passed, right? So they did not get the patent and therefore it was available for import. So in Malaysia, we had given patents to sofosbuvir and it goes on for another 15 years at least. So the Ministry of Health did its homework, did the calculations, and many civil society groups, including the World Network, patient groups, others, we came in together and we say, look, here is the information. You can source it, and the Ministry of Health was involved in a research project with the Egyptian company and DNDi, which is a drug for infectious diseases outfit here in Malaysia as well. Mm-hmm. And so they had a program where we could eventually get generic production here or import. But to do that, because you're given the patent, the government has to issue what we call a compulsory license. In other words, without the consent of the patent holder, because it's too expensive, you try to negotiate the price down and it was still unaffordable, then the government has a right to issue for public hospital use a license to import, which we did. Mm-hmm. So in 2017, the Ministry of Health, together with the Ministry of Domestic Trade, which is responsible for intellectual property, we got this license. It was historic. And so you know how much we imported the generics from Egypt, mm-hmm. and we could treat our patients at about 300 ringgit. Gosh. 300 ringgit, yeah, for that sofosbuvir.
Compared to 400 over 1,000 ringgit.
1,000, right. So with the combination of the two drugs, we could treat around 1,000 ringgit and less, instead of 450,000. So with that, the Ministry of Health included this into our treatment program, national treatment program. It's free. And then we trained and, all our clinic kesehatan, we decentralized and we've been rolling out. Even in the middle of COVID, we could afford to do this, mm-hmm. because we brought down the price so drastically from 450,000 to about 1,000. Mm. Right? But you had to overcome the barrier of that patent. So this is a good example. And we have many, many medicines, especially now in cancer. How many people do we know, family, friends, who have cancer and cannot afford the medicines? Because most of these drugs are locked up in patents. And it's not one medicine, one patent. Mm-hmm. One medicine can have more than one patent, can have a lot of patents around it. And so when you make a little bit of a change to a medicine, mm-hmm. if our laws are very lax, mm-hmm. then you can actually get another 20 years and another 20 years. So you extend beyond 20 years with multiple patents into sometimes 30, 40 years of monopoly in the market. And this is what we call evergreening of monopoly, you know. And this is the problem. So across all medicines, even before COVID, we had these problems in all countries, including Malaysia.
Mm.
And hence the waiver. So come the pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. Suddenly, and what happens with this monopoly is that you restrict the number of manufacturers,
mm-hmm.
you restrict the number of production available, what we call the freedom to operate in the industry,
mm-hmm.
right? So you can't, you know, you can't, your hands are tied. You can't import even if somebody else is doing it in another country. So this creates shortages in times of need, right? Mm-hmm. And this is what we saw happen in the pandemic. Right at the beginning, remember, masks were in shortage. The 3M masks were in global shortage. PPEs, you know, and we read stories about how, you know, China was exporting, you know, orders to Canada, and then they got intercepted, or, you know, by other third countries at the airport. You know, it was a crazy chaos in the 21st century. How did that happen, right? Mm. Because of shortage due to monopoly. Your 3M masks has more than 200 patents around different parts and designs. Can you imagine that 3M mask?
So the patents may not cover the product as in its entirety, but may cover small aspects.
No, it's different parts. It's different parts, different aspects of it. Yeah, that's why one product can have more than one patent, right? And different characteristics, and then different processes. And sometimes even like our law, mm-hmm. even if two different types of medicines are no longer patented, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Their patents have expired, or they never applied for a patent in Malaysia, so they're free. But instead of taking two or three pills, you want to combine into one, which is easier to take for the patient.
Mm-hmm.
Very common in HIV and even hepatitis, right? So when you combine the three or two into one, that combination in Malaysia will give you another 20 years, even though the original two are no longer patented. But we treat the combination. Now, you and I, if we are in the pharmaceutical industry and we are whatever doing research, wouldn't it be logical to think, instead of taking three or two medicines, tablets, why don't we combine into one?
Mm-hmm.
Biological. What is so inventive about that idea that you give a 20-year monopoly?
Mm-hmm.
So in India, for example, or in Egypt, they don't allow what we call combination patents. But in Malaysia, we do that.
I see.
Right? So the waiver came because suddenly we woke up one day with the pandemic. We are short of diagnostic testing kits. We are short of masks. We are short of so many different things that South Africa and India decided. And then there was a big race to get vaccines. We were looking for, also medicines that to treat COVID-19. And remember, it's a viral infection.
Mm-hmm.
So what they were doing all over the world, there were many, many teams of researchers looking for repurposing existing antivirals used for, let's say, HIV,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether that could be also used to battle COVID-19. So you had this whole range of products that needed to be available to tackle COVID-19. And we had shortages. And in there was anticipation that vaccines, when they were available, will also be limited to a few manufacturers. Hence, they push in this idea of a waiver to temporarily suspend the implementation of the WTO international agreement so that all countries will be free to operate with their manufacturers if they exist, and then to also help each other if you have some countries that don't have manufacturing capacity.
Hmm. I think that example you brought up, Yuk-Ling, with the Sofosbuvir really highlights how patents, which a lot of your average layperson may not think about it, right? But it can mm-hmm. have such a drastic effect
on you
if you happen to need the medication, because then the cost just skyrockets.
Yes, so it cuts you off from having access to affordable treatment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which means it's a matter of life and death. We're not talking mm-hmm. here about, there's always an argument, oh, we need to give this monopoly because it is an incentive,
mm-hmm.
yeah, for the manufacturers, I mean, for the big pharma companies to do R&D. Now, there's so much literature because this is a contested issue, even in the United States, which, mm-hmm. like I said, has the most expensive medical treatment and medicines in the world, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because the assumption is that you will price as much as you think the market in the country can take it.
Yes.
So Malaysia is considered a middle-income country. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Come on, you come in here. We have B40 who relies on government and taxpayers to give them health care.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So of course, you know, it's not so easy. But we realize that a lot of the investment into developing a drug, most of it in the first stages are actually public, even in the US and the UK. And we saw this in the vaccine
mm-hmm.
because the primary research of going through to discover that active ingredient or that particular molecule that could work involves a lot of primary research, which are always in public universities. all funded by, let's say, the National Health Institutes in the US, etc., or mm-hmm. the UK government. And we saw this in every vaccine, it was publicly funded. But there was Germany, UK, or the US taxpayer, right? So then the company comes in and develops it to the commercial level, maybe do the clinical trials, which are expensive, but clinical trials have a lot of volunteers in people who are sick mm-hmm. or who volunteer to be what we do, we call the placebo, right? In other words, I'm the sort of the control population. And people, you don't pay people to do clinical trials. It's unethical. Mm-hmm. So every clinical trial involves volunteers. And you go to countries like Malaysia, we do a clinical trial in collaboration, let's say a company and the Ministry of Health. We are using public health facilities, hospital equipment, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So the every drug that's developed, when they give you how many billions they spend, you deconstruct it. A lot of it is actually public funded. And yet you get a monopoly and you treat it as private goods. And this is, I think, what has come out as so unfair in the pandemic on COVID.
Mm, and we've seen so many people raise question how it has led to so many inequities, right? And that's
Absolutely.
Why we're seeing the pandemic continue to rage on despite...
Yes.
Despite some countries declaring it as back to normal, but the pandemic,
it's not gone away. Yes, and it's staggering. I mean, even today, you know, we were looking at there's the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development, UNCTAD. They monitor all this. Mm-hmm. So they were looking at the what's happening in the situation now. We have what we call least developed countries. These are among the poorest countries. For example, in our region, it's countries like Laos and Cambodia, mm-hmm. right? And then in Africa, most of these least developed countries are in Africa. These are very poor countries, the most vulnerable. So the UN did a quick survey and found on average, every resident of high-income countries, these are the wealthy countries, right in the West, they benefited from about US $10 of imports of COVID products. This is an average. Okay? Each resident has about 10 US dollars worth of COVID products that were imported for them. Then we come down to the middle-income countries and the number goes down to average of one US dollar per resident, all right? And then to the low-income countries, it is like 10 cents average per person. That is why the number of people who are tested in these least developed countries, about 20-something of them, 30-something, is like less than 1%. Mm. 15% of only 15% of Africa has been vaccinated fully so far. Mm-hmm. Now, we are very lucky in Malaysia, mm-hmm. but we have spent billions, you know, at least $4 to $5 billion on vaccines and equipment and diagnostic kits. It's very expensive to tackle a pandemic. Mm-hmm. We are lucky. I think as Malaysians, we sometimes we complain a lot, but we don't realize that we have had a very successful, rollout program, one of the highest in the world, okay? But many countries are far behind. And not just vaccines, because even if you have milder kind of infections, you mm-hmm. still have people getting sick. And if people are getting sick, then you have to make sure that they get treatment. And those medicines are also running into shortages because patents are being filed all over the world for any potential treatment drug. And so the battle of intellectual property barriers and inequity will not end. Yeah, it is going to continue and deepen.
Mm. I want to press on that point a bit more in press on that point more in a bit, Yok Ling. But right now, Let's go for a quick break. I'm speaking today to Chi Yok Ling, Executive Director of the Third World Network, and we are discussing intellectual property, patents, and really the need to temporarily waive these as the pandemic continues to rage on, no matter how much, governments would like to declare it to be over. We'll be right back after a quick break. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. I'm joined today by the Executive Director of the Third World Network, Chi Yok Ling, and we're discussing the proposed intellectual property waiver, or the TRIPS waiver, by India and South Africa back in October 2020, actually. And unfortunately, negotiations are still ongoing at the World Trade Organization on whether something like this can pass or not, can happen or not. And something like this, as we were discussing before the break, can save so many lives, especially in countries which cannot afford access to testing, to vaccines, to drugs. Now, Yok Ling, it's been 2 years of COVID-19, right? As you said earlier, Malaysia is among the countries that have achieved significantly high vaccination rates. Some countries are choosing to go back to pre-COVID normals, like the pandemic isn't around, So then why is the TRIPS waiver still important now? Is it too little too late?
No, it's actually still very important. I think most countries try to bring things back to so-called normal, because there's so many things. I mean, obviously, there's socio-economic fallout. And then politically, many governments, you know, when people get very frustrated, don't trust the government, then it's about whether I will win the next election. So therefore, going back to normal has got different motivations. Mm-hmm. But from the public health point of view, this pandemic is not over. I mean, just a few days ago, I was reading a big debate going on in the U.S. In the government circles and their scientific, advisors of the Biden administration, and they are talking about, you know, the need to look at vaccines that will be to have new vaccines or repurpose of the existing vaccines to be able to deal with new variants. Mm-hmm. All right, so they are talking about that. They're anticipating like in autumn when the conditions for spread of viruses and all that are quite becomes quite high risk. They are talking about preparing for another wave. Okay. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, people are getting sick. And let's not fool ourselves. Just because the more infectious variants like Omicron, seems to be milder. Mm-hmm. But actually, because the numbers are so big, then the number of people who will get sick, there's still lots of people with underlying conditions. Or you may not know, you may be that one out of 100,000, but you could get it so bad that you get sick, right? And you can die. Mm-hmm. So basically, the battle, the what did not get so much attention was the parallel battle to look for treatment, what we call therapeutics. Medicines that can actually treat you if you get infected, right? Mm-hmm. And vaccines, don't forget, do not give you immunity. Yeah, it can lessen, it can protect you to a large degree, but it doesn't stop you from getting the disease, mm-hmm. okay? And if you get it, you will need treatment. And right now, we don't have much option. And some of the things that are available to treat advanced, you're very, very sick, stage four, or whatever, they are so expensive that nobody can afford them, all right? And they're not enough supply. So we do need them. And also testing. The way to actually deal with a lot of this is monitoring. So a lot of testing is needed, diagnostics, testing kits. And that also requires you to have production. Mm-hmm. A lot of product, diversify, scale up production. Now, every one of these products are locked up in some form or other of intellectual property. It can be patents. It can be industrial design, yeah? Or ventilators. For example, the valves in ventilators are patented. So to change the ventilator, for example, in Italy, in the mm-hmm. early stage in 2020, remember Northern Italy was the first big explosion outside of China,
yeah,
right?
That's right.
And ventilator valves were in shortage. And it was, I think it was from reports, it was about $11,000 to change one of those valves. And there were a couple of Italian firms using 3D printing could actually make those same valves for, like, according to the Doctors Without Borders, they say it could be made for around $1 US, gosh, right? And so they went ahead to make it because the government wanted to procure it. And they were served with letters of threat. You are infringing my patent rights and you have no right to do that. You're doing it against my patents, blah, blah, blah. So you have that kind of thing happening, right? So yes, we do need a lot of this. And that's why the waiver is still very relevant. And the waiver covers, it's a temporary suspension. And I think the India and South Africa, they propose that we will make it 3 years, okay? Mm-hmm. And then at the end of 3 years, we will review it. And this is back from 2021, where they amended the proposal a little bit because the developed countries were so against it. Mm-hmm. So they say, okay, we will make it quite clear. At the end of 3 years, we will review because we don't know when it's going to end.
That's
okay?
Right.
But it will cover... It will suspend or waive a number of provisions in the TRIPS agreement that covers patents, copyright, and also trade secrets. Mm. Because without know-how, without technology transfer, I cannot make these vaccines or medicines or whatever. Some things we don't need to, you know, your generic companies can make it mm-hmm. because they know how to do it. They mm-hmm. just can't do it because of the intellectual property barrier. But you could have some cases where you do need a sharing of technology. But that is protected under trade secrets, and there's no limit. Remember, I told you patents are 20 years.
Yes.
Trade secret is forever.
I see.
That's why you need to suspend that as well, so that you can have predictability, so that companies can invest. Because if I'm a generic company mm-hmm. in Malaysia or in India or whatever, I will have to invest in making all these products, mm-hmm. right? It's not that I just do it like that, you know. So will I take the risk if I don't have clarity of whether it's legal or not? Mm-hmm. And that's what India and South Africa is trying to do. Have clarity, temporary, only for a range of COVID products to tackle the pandemic. Otherwise, we will see a repeat of what happened with vaccines. Mm-hmm. When more and more medicines come out that can be used for treatment that we cannot access it, it's too expensive. Even if you can afford it, you can't buy it because mm-hmm. it's not available.
Mm-hmm. And even with Malaysia, with Paxlovid, right, there was that race for Malaysia to get our own supply to race against more wealthy countries who can afford to book stock in advance.
Yeah, and you know, and because if we don't get it, we scold our government. Why you didn't get it, right? Remember the early vaccine day. Yes. But, you know, all these are also being approved on emergency use basis. Mm-hmm. Normally, you know, because a drug is very, it goes into your body. It interacts with so many different things. Mm-hmm. So that's why you have longer period of clinical trials. You it takes time to really assess properly. I totally support our MOH, our National Pharmaceutical Regulatory Agency, NPRA. Mm-hmm. You know, there were some criticisms in the early days that they were so slow. Why do you need to go and assess already approved in the US or Singapore? Because each country decides on the safety standards. And Malaysia has very high safety standards. Sometimes you may say it's so strict that you are too strict, maybe. But at least you and I know when something is approved, you know.
It's gone through the due process.
You know, nobody can guarantee anything. That's why Pfizer and all that wanted to have no liability clauses, right? Mm. They say if anything happens with this vaccine, I'm not responsible because everything was going so fast. But I think what we have to understand is Paxlovid is a good example. There are patent applications in this country, but not granted yet because all this just came, right? So there's no patent in this country, but it is so expensive. So I don't know what is being negotiated right now, right? All over the world, there are patent applications sitting in patent offices. And our Malaysian intellectual property office called MyIPO. Mm-hmm. Like I said, you know, we have had a lot of public discussion and we have sent many memos to the government saying that we have to tighten up our rules because our pharmaceutical patents are given too freely. Mm-hmm. We need to change those rules, right? And so now it's Paxlovid. Yes, we are lucky. I don't know how much we are spending, mm-hmm. but imagine if there were more manufacturers available to scale up production. Even if our own companies could probably make it because it's actually a combination of two drugs which are not new. Mm-hmm. We could actually be spending less money. And don't forget, every extra dollar we spend on COVID, we're taking it from somewhere else. So in a backlog of cases in other, you know, treatment has also been affected all over the world, including Malaysia.
Mm. And that's why we need that waiver, right? So now what I understand what was believed to be the latest draft of discussions ongoing at the WTO between the EU, the US, India and South Africa. That draft was leaked recently in mid-March. Now, you know, initially there was excitement that there was progress, but very quickly that was replaced by criticism that the draft was problematic. Perhaps could you briefly break it down why it was problematic?
Yeah, first of all, you know, there has never been any negotiation at all because the developed countries, the Western countries, from day one, kept saying, especially the Europeans, the EU has been the toughest, the most hardline, okay? Mm-hmm. They kept saying, we don't need a waiver because in the existing TRIPS agreement, you have all these, what we call flexibilities, exceptions to the monopoly. For example, I gave the example of Sofosbuvir where we use a compulsory license, right, to bring in a generic, even though we have patents here.
Yeah.
But each of those actions is product by product. And every time you try to do it, you get so much pressure, even though legally you can do it. It's allowed in the TRIPS agreement. You have it in your law. But when you try to do it, every time, Malaysia's done it twice in history, okay, for medicines. And each time we had so much pressure from the pharmaceutical industry, from the Association of Pharmaceutical Industry in the United States, even from the United States government, pressuring us to say that this is sending a bad signal, you know, to investors, then they won't come to your country. Pharmaceutical industry does not invest in our country. They export to us and just sell us expensive medicines. Most of the production is our local companies in the generic sector. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, but the pressure is intense. It took us 2 years to issue a compulsory license because of that pressure. And then you go and see your prime minister, et cetera, et cetera. Happens all the time, all over the world. Okay. So our argument, which we support all the civil society, lots of, even Joseph Stiglitz, former, you know, Ban Ki-moon, everybody has come in on this issue.
Yep.
And South Africa and India argued, right, that product by product and so many patterns around it, it's crazy. And we're in a pandemic, right?
We can't afford the time to go through each item.
So it's very, very structured. And all they wanted was very simple, as I was saying earlier on. For 3 years, suspend it in these areas for these products. Mm-hmm. Then let's negotiate. If you think it's too broad and this, then we can negotiate. But the developed countries never wanted to even deal with that document. The actual decision is only like, you know, 1.5 pages. Okay. Mm. Then after Biden came into power, there's so much pressure within the United States as well. So the Biden administration said we'll support an IP waiver, not just patents, but also trade secret and others, but only for vaccines. Only for vaccines. Europeans continue to resist, and the UK as well continue to resist. a lot of pressure at the national level and from outside. So, you know, countries one by one began to support. Now, we have 65 countries, including South Africa and India, which are co-sponsors. That means they sponsor the entire decision as a whole, including Malaysia. We are very proud. Malaysia did that, okay? So we are co-sponsors. Then there are another maybe 40 countries that support, like China, all right? They say, okay, we support the idea in principle. Let's talk about, you know, the details, right? So you have 100 countries ready to go. So then the secretariat of the DG, the Director General of the WTO, facilitated these, what we call the quad, right? So they got the EU, they got the US, India, and South Africa into... So what we call the negotiations were not negotiations of the member states of WTO. Mm-hmm. It was really to try and strike a deal among the four, what they consider the most critical players. Mm-hmm. But don't forget, there are 63 other countries behind South Africa and India.
That's right.
Including the whole of Africa, all right? And all the LDC countries, which are very poor. These are the needed, you know, countries which need all these products. So that, in the end, when it was leaked out, we were very shocked that it was only about vaccines. It's and it puts additional conditions that you don't find even in the TRIPS agreement on using some of those things, right? So for all kinds of reasons, which are very, is bad. In fact, I think the conclusion of everybody, all kinds of experts and civil society groups, this is not a waiver. You cannot call this a waiver. Mm-hmm. In fact, you're adding things to your obligations under TRIPS. So it's a disaster. And then it turned out that it was not an agreement among these four, right? Because the DG actually herself came out in a statement saying, oh, no, there's no agreement yet among these four parties. It was something that they tried to get a solution, and then the countries are going to go back and consult with them, with their governments, and also with all the other countries. So there's no deal. There is no deal, okay? Meanwhile, there have been so many letters from, you know, dignitaries, celebrities, you know, very well-known economists and scientists and medical people to the president, to the Prime Minister of India and the Prime Minister of South Africa. And a lot of the patient groups and the public and the NGOs have written to all their governments asking, first of all, India and South Africa, do not accept this nonsense, right? Mm-hmm. Every day in the very influential magazines and newspapers all over India, this is being talked about. And in Malaysia, we had 14 organizations and networks. We sent a letter to MITI last week saying, you know, Malaysia should stand firm and not accept. If this thing comes to the bigger membership of WTO, we should not accept it, right? So in June, the TRIPS Council, there's a council that deals with the intellectual property agreement of WTO. They will be meeting in June. And so between now and June, we want to put more pressure to say, come on, you know, don't be hypocritical, Europe, right? You can't talk about solidarity on the one hand and then you do everything to create more inequity in excess.
So then, you know, some leading economists, Joseph Stiglitz, you mentioned names like Jayati Ghosh, as well as Peter Kamalingan from Oxfam wrote to the South African president saying that a bad deal is worse than no deal. So I'm assuming that that's a sentiment that's shared by many.
Yes, definitely. Because we say there is only one deal and that's a waiver. Mm-hmm. Okay. A waiver that is simple, straightforward. Don't make it so complicated. Nobody knows how to use it. Then it's hypocritical.
It's
right?
supposed to help people, right? Not
it's supposed to help. It's supposed to help. Right? And I think the so-called lull, the sense that everything is back to normal is actually what gives a lack of momentum. People think, oh, it's okay. You know, maybe we don't need it so much. But, you know, just look back 2 years ago, how unprepared the world was and how the most unprepared were the richest countries in the world, how they were scrambling among themselves to hoard all the vaccines. And they hoard so much that now, you know, most of it cannot be used. So they are dumping it and as donations to countries who are poor. Mm-hmm. And those countries are awarded because they say it's so near expiry date. Some of them.
You can't use it.
If you bring it in, I don't have my infrastructure. My health system is not strong enough to absorb it. Then it might get in the wrong hands and use. You know, so think of all the wastage. And by the way, if you look at Pfizer, Moderna, right? The money that they have made in the last 2 years is in the billions. The numbers are staggering in terms of how much they have profited, you know. So it is unconscionable. And I think the longer we delay, the less we are going to be able to be prepared for what needs to be done. Mm-hmm. Now we say we have to test everybody, survey them. You know, testing kits are expensive. Mm-hmm. And they're also patented, many of them. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you might need new tests, you might need new whatever. So I look at the treatment medicines, as you mentioned Paxlovid earlier on, and that's only the beginning. Now, that one, you can only use within the first 5 days, okay?
Mm-hmm, that's
if you,
right.
If you don't use it first 5 days, useless.
Which
right?
means you need to test people.
You need to have a system you can test, and then you have to report, and then you have to act quickly. Now, the DNDi, this drug for neglected diseases, has a program with the Ghanaian research institution, mm-hmm. and they want to do some clinical trials. Take Paxlovid, combine it with something else, mm-hmm. and maybe it could extend the number of days to, let's say, maybe up to 8 to 10 days.
I see.
Where you can still use it, but in combination with something else. You know, the drug company has refused to supply. They refuse to provide the necessary drugs to do the clinical trials.
And that's in the case of a clinical trial as well.
That's right. And the condition is not just I won't supply you because I'm the only one making it at the moment, you see, right, Pfizer? But they also have a condition that you cannot use their drug for research. So they put a condition on research.
And that's allowed because of their patent?
Because they have monopoly. They decide what to do and they can. And then in contracts, even outside of patent, in your contract, you can put all kinds of things. So if a country is desperate, mm-hmm. it will agree to anything. And those contracts are always confidential. So that's another story in terms of the power that you have once you have a monopoly to also put other conditions on it. But but this so-called leaked document, you know, really it is totally discredited because it is not something that was agreed by India and South Africa. There was a lot of pressure for them to accept something, we think. But I think there's so much publicity. We are talking about it even now in Malaysia, mm-hmm. in this program. And I think the more we understand, and worse, what is really dangerous is that it is so narrow in the scope. Like, say, it's only patents, only vaccines. But also, it puts in additional conditions. So that could be used against us post-COVID to say that, you know, for emergency and public health, you know, blah, 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 then you are tightening your hands even more, worse than what we are in at the moment.
Mm. Let's go for another quick break now, Yok Ling. And, you know, I have a couple more questions for you when we come back. I'm speaking today to Chi Yok Ling, Executive Director of the Third World Network. And we are talking about why we still need the TRIPS waiver for all COVID-19 related medical tools. This includes tests, diagnostics, vaccines and drugs. We'll be right back after a few messages. Keep it here on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. Joining me today on Zoom is Chi Yok Ling, the Executive Director of the Third World Network. And we've been discussing quite extensively about the impact of intellectual property, especially patents, on the accessibility and affordability of life-saving drugs and tools like vaccines, especially during the pandemic. Now, Yok Ling, I'm thinking back to what you mentioned, you know, right at the start about how different countries have different rules and regulations when it comes to intellectual properties, when it comes to giving out patents. Now, in a situation that we see now with COVID-19, right, with challenges relating to intellectual property, the influence of pharmaceutical companies, is this a situation that needs a national solution rather than an international one?
Yeah, the solutions are both, right? For mm-hmm. example, even if you have a waiver, mm-hmm. in the end, the waiver has to be used nationally.
That's right.
Right? But the waiver gives you an international kind of green light. So you take away any uncertainty or, you know, so you need them to free up because it's an international rule, mm-hmm. right? TRIPS is an international agreement. So you free up so the waiver is to, and the waiver is actually something is allowed in the WTO system. Mm-hmm. It's been used for other circumstances, nothing new, by the way, okay? So it is anticipated there may be a situation you need to waive any of the agreements in the WTO. Right. So here you have that waiver. And once you have that, then you give predictability. Now, a country may choose not to want to use it mm-hmm. if it's OK. Mm. But if it wants to use it, then the manufacturers, the regulatory authorities will have a certainty. So, for example, in Malaysia, we give patents quite freely. So but with this waiver, we can say for this period, we can bring in, we can import or we can even manufacture and we don't have to worry. OK. But in the long term, we in Malaysia need to really go back and look at our patent rules, our pharmaceutical guidelines for what we allow to be patented or not. And, you know, back in 2017, our Competition Commission of Malaysia mm-hmm. had done a study on the pharmaceutical sector because high prices is a big problem in the country. Every year, more and more, we are spending as consumers more and more of our out-of-pocket expenses, right? Mm-hmm. Because what you cannot get from the public system, you have to buy yourself if you can afford it. And then our health budget is also very limited, you know? So even MOH has been complaining about the prices. So we have a study that actually identifies that there's not enough competition in the Malaysian market because one of the barriers really is intellectual property. Patents being a main one. Without with patents barrier, your local importers and manufacturers cannot move. Okay? The minute the patent ends, the next day, if you have a generic in the market, it can fall by 50% overnight, the price.
Gosh.
It's one case of a cancer drug was like that. Because we could register the generic beforehand, right? And the minute, and so our local company was ready with it to import and then later on to manufacture. Overnight. You know, so when overnight the price fell by 50%. Now, how can that be possible? When the same company with negotiation trying to get them to drop the price, they won't drop the price until that day.
So that would be the profit margin, right?
Yes, exactly. We have to tighten up our don't give all these evergreening patents, as we were saying, you know, the ones that have very little tweaking, mm-hmm. combine two into one, you give another 20 years, we've got to clean all that up. Okay. And in the end, it's not about the profit of it's profiteering, I would call it, mm-hmm. yeah, of the pharmaceutical industry. Because the long-term cost of a society that cannot be treated, that has to go to hospital, the economic cost and the social cost is so much higher than that profit you're so worried about. And we don't tax them that much either. Our corporate tax is very low in this country. The other thing we need to do is regulate the margin, the mm-hmm. markup. Now, MOH has been working with the Ministry of Domestic Trade for years Consumer Association of Penang and many consumer groups and health groups. We have been asking for price regulation. Mm-hmm. WHO also encourages price regulation. A lot of experiences. Most countries have some form or other price regulation. So we have a mechanism that the Ministry of Health has actually developed, which is to do a pilot phase, pick X number of very important medicines, which have only one supplier. It could be because of patents. It could be because there's only one generic. Okay. And then you regulate the markup. Depending on the range, they did some research and everything. We mark up, so we limit. You can mark up from 10 to 30%, no more. So that's very sensible. We all support that. But industry doesn't support that. Private hospitals don't support that. So they've all gone and they're trying to kill this mechanism. So that is a national action that we really needed to do. And I think it would be good for the public to support a price regulation mechanism. It's not price control like your mask, where you fix mm-hmm. the price. This is just to regulate the margin of the profit.
Mm, because ultimately, you know, it will come out of your pocket in some way, right? Either in terms of your taxes or if you have to go to a private facility.
Exactly. So if we can control the price, then we can actually, you know, have more affordability and access. Mm. You know, and so if you combine no price control plus, you know, too many patents given, then health costs can only go one way, which is up. And that means a lot of people will not be able to get treatment. Mm. Just think cancer. All right. A lot of people are rather die than to go for treatment to prolong life. They say, if I can prolong 2 or 3 years, why bother? Because I will go bankrupt my family. There will be nothing left, right? But why are we telling people they cannot have 2 or 3 or 4 more years of life? How can we make those decisions like that? Mm. We are forcing people to make those decisions where the system can actually free up, you know, something.
Mm. Yeah, that's quite sobering to think about, that we're forcing people to choose between life and death.
Absolutely.
Now, just one last question, Yok Ling, before we end, right? Mm. Looking at the bigger picture into the future, considering what we're seeing now with the intellectual property challenges, the looser restrictions in some countries, enforcement of patents, and on top of that, experts warning us that pandemics will become more common. How concerned are you about our ability to encourage research and innovation into life-saving products in the future, if we might see something like this happening all over again?
Yeah, I think what is, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, there was a big there was a moment of solidarity. All right, and this was really a lot of research institutions. Don't forget, we always think of the pharmaceutical industry being the one out there delivering all these life saving drugs, but like I said, behind them is a whole network and many years of public research most of the time, okay? Mm-hmm. So a lot of these public institutions or individual scientists and researchers they came out and it was in the Lancet, it was published in the Lancet actually, a call to say we have to really look at how we can have global cooperation to develop global public goods, okay? Because vaccines and, you know, in a pandemic, all this should be global public goods. What intellectual property does is that it turns what should be public good into private property. And then it becomes a profit thing, all right? The shares go up, Moderna and all that. The shares went up so much, they made money from not even having a single vaccine dose out there, just mm-hmm. from the share. Mm-hmm. The first announcements go to Wall Street, right? That system is very anti-health and anti-right to life. So we could actually have, remember the Oxford team, they actually originally wanted to, because theirs was 99.9% public funded. And they actually were prepared to actually give anybody who qualifies, has the ability to do it, will give you a license. So unlimited licenses, because they hold patents, yep. but they will just give licenses, okay, and not charge. They were prepared to do that. Unfortunately, according to reports, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation went in there and persuaded them not to do that, mm-hmm. and instead to give it to AstraZeneca with a few licenses here and there, right? So that was and for the scientists, you may have heard interviews and read about, what some of these scientists felt. They felt they were quite devastated because they thought that theirs would be the one that would be easy to get out there, affordable. And of course, AstraZeneca did not make money like Moderna and Pfizer did, but they said they would only keep the price low and no profit, so-called, during the period of the pandemic. Any discount is during the period of the pandemic. When the pandemic ends or not, it's up to them to decide. Mm-hmm. So we're back to square one, right? So I think there is hope. There is a different way of doing research that is more public-oriented. And this is how research was done before all these intellectual property rules became so-called the norm. And it's not that long ago. It's only like 30 years or something like that. So let's go back to that. Let's do even within the region. Right now, people are competing and being selfish in research as well. Mm-hmm. Whereas, so the selfishness we see in vaccine hoarding, in hijacking masks and PPEs on the, in the airport tarmac, we see that kind of territoriality also in our research community and the culture of research. We could have changed that. Because this is not the last of the pandemics, and this pandemic showed us that we think we're so junkie 21st century, but we are very primitive in some of the most important systems, And intellectual property is really, I think, a huge barrier. Mm-hmm. So we are hopeful, all of us, that with a lot more public awareness, each of our government, being a member of the WTO, will actually take a strong stand. If you have to isolate the EU, right? Then let's see how we can do it. And the US is hiding behind the EU as well, right? So because of course their industry has spent a lot of money lobbying against this waiver too.
I think what strikes me from hearing you share all these is that we don't want to rely on the goodwill of pharmaceutical companies, like the Oxford AstraZeneca case.
Yeah, there is no such thing, because even the Oxford team in the end, were subject to basically market forces, mm-hmm. and market forces in this field is extremely monopolistic and profiteering, unfortunately.
Well, I'm glad that there are people who are still hopeful, and we have, there are many countries co-sponsoring that waiver, who are supporting that waiver. So hopefully we will see some good news coming out of it.
Yeah.
We'll keep putting pressure on your own governments.
Yes, that's right. And I think sometimes it's not just pressure, it's actually the governments who want to do it, mm-hmm. is to support the government so that we can strengthen our governments against the pressure of industry or the EU governments or the US, government or whatever. I think it's most of the time you find, of course, every government has different interests as well within the government, right? Mm-hmm. So I think we need to make sure that we have a one understanding in the government. And of course, given our current situation, trying to get these issues on the political agenda can sometimes be a struggle, but we have to do it, because in the end, it is the whole government that has to be behind any of these decisions. And we'll be there for them, watching them, supporting them, and if necessary, pressuring them.
And on that note, thank you so much for joining me today, Yok Ling.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Chi Yok Ling, the executive director of the Third World Network, on why we still need a TRIPS waiver for all COVID-19 related medical tools 2 years after the pandemic. If you missed any part of today's show or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can download our podcasts on bfm.my or on the BFM app. I'm Lim Suen, and this has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.